भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय रीडिंग फ्रॉम द श्रीमद् भागवतम This is Canto 7, Chapter 13, Verse 31. Do we still start with the Sanskrit words, or do we do the whole verse? Because I noticed the last few days, devotees have been just going right into the verse. What is the procedure? Is it changed, or is that just whimsical? Huh? No, I want to hear from Savas. Go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead, Duda, because that's like almost a rubber stamp of... Well, what happens is that recently devotees have been reading the whole verse immediately rather than reading each word. Okay. I want to... Okay. So we do the words, then the verse, and then the synonyms. Okay, great. Thank you. Adhyatmika aribi. Adhyatmika aridaivika aribodhika. That's a synonym. Okay, I'll say it again. Adhyatmika. Aridaivika and Aribodhika. Translation. Adhyatmika are those miseries which come from our own body and mind. Aridaivika are those which come from the demigods or catastrophes or calamities. And Aribodhika are those which come from other living entities. Dukkhaiha, by the threefold miseries of material life. Avimuktasya, of one who is not freed from such material conditions, or one who is subjected to birth, death, old age, and disease. Karachit. I didn't hear you. Karachit. Sometimes, upanatai, things obtained because of severe miseries. Artaya, even if some benefit is derived. Kamai, which can fulfill one's material desires. Kriyeta, what do they do? Kim, and what is the value of such happiness? Okay. Okay. Okay, I got it. Yeah, so we'll do the verse now, the four-line verse. Sorry about that.
Adhyatmika dibir dukha. Let me try that again. Adhyatmika dibir dukhair. Adhyatmika Dibir dukar avimaktasya karachit martasya kritro panatir arte kama kriyeta kim adhyatmika dibir dukar Avimuktasya karichit. Martyasya. Martyasya kwich ropanatar. Artai kamai kwich yetakim. Adyatmika dibir dukar. Avimuktasya karichit. Martyasya kwich ropanatar. Artai kamai kriyetakim.
Please read.
Adyatmikai dibir dukar. Avimuktasya karachit. Martasya kriposanayar. Artai kamai kriyetakim.
Ladies, please. We've already done the synonyms, so we'll go right to the translation. Materialistic activities are always mixed with three kinds of miserable conditions, adiyatmika, adidaivika, and adibhotika. Therefore, even if one achieves some success by performing such activities, what is the benefit of this success? One is still subjected to birth, death, old age, disease, and the reactions of his fruitive activities. Please repeat. Materialistic activities are always mixed with three kinds of miserable conditions. Adiyatmika, adidaivika, adibhotika. Therefore, even if one achieves some success by performing such activities, what is the benefit of this success? One is still subjected to birth, death, old age, disease, and the reactions of his fruitive activities. Purport by Srila Prabhupada, His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki. According to the materialistic way of life, if a poor man, after laboring very, very hard, gets a material profit at the end of his life, he is considered a success, even though he again dies while suffering the threefold miseries, adiyatmika, adidaivika, and adibhotika. No one can escape the threefold miseries of materialistic life, namely miseries pertaining to the body and mind. And which ones are those? Adi what? The body and mind? Yes, adiyatmika,
miseries pertaining to the difficulties imposed by society.
And what are they? Huh? Loud and clear? Yes, thank you.
Aribodhika. And then we have the last ones, which are... And miseries inflicted upon us by natural disturbances from earthquakes, famines, droughts, floods, epidemics, and so on. And these are known as Adi-Daivika. Yes. Miseries which come from the demigods who are implementing Krishna's, implementing his work or giving numerous persons their karmic reactions. If one works very hard, suffering the threefold miseries, and then is successful in getting some small benefit, what is the value of this benefit? Besides that, even if a karmi is successful in accumulating some material wealth, he still cannot enjoy it, for he must die in bereavement. In other words, he can enjoy, but at some time he has to be separated from it, and that time is the time of death. So there is bereavement when you're separated from something you enjoy, something you love, something that is pleasing to you, something that you have become attached to. There will be bereavement. Bereavement means suffering, more misery. I have even seen a dying man begging a medical attendant to increase his life by 4 years so that he could complete his material plans. Of course, the medical man was unsuccessful in expanding the life of the man, who therefore died in great bereavement. He couldn't finish what he set out to do. It was half finished. So what happens to him? What is his fate? He has to come back and get some either that project or some other project and have the sense of satisfaction that, yeah, I completed it, I did it. And that's what people are living for generally. I did it. I fulfilled it. I'm an achiever. I'm a winner. It's this kind of a mentality that people are desiring to have. Continuing. Material plans for material happiness have no value, but under the spell of the illusory energy, we consider them extremely valuable. There were many politicians, social reformers, and philosophers who died very miserably without deriving any practical value from their material plans. Therefore, a sane and sensible man never desires to work hard under the conditions of the threefold miseries, only to die in disappointment.
Om Agina Timarandas Yaganjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmaditam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge, and I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet.
Adyatmika Dibir Dukhair Avimuktasya Karchit Martyasya Kritro Panatair Artai Kamai Create the Kim. Materialistic activities are always mixed with three kinds of miserable conditions, adhyatmika, adhidaivika, and adhibodhika. Therefore, even if one achieves some success by performing such activities, what is the benefit of this success? One is still subjected to birth, death, old age, and disease, and the reactions of his fruitive activities.
So, generally, when people are pursuing a particular path or pursuing a particular goal, they don't usually think about the far distant future. It's not a common thing to do. You're so busy trying to accomplish, so busy trying to achieve what's before you and dealing with the problems, the difficulties, the conflicts, the competition, and so many things are there which completely distract us from thinking about the ultimate future of this. What is the goal?
And when you achieve your goal, what then? Quite often when a person achieves a goal, he enjoys the goal for a little while, and then he becomes bored with it and wants to go on to achieve some higher goal. For example, sometimes a person has just the simple goal of getting a car. He's never had a car in his life. And finally, he has a job, and he's saving money. And he finally gets the car. He gets a car that he can afford. You know, maybe gets a Chevrolet or gets a Toyota, which is within his range of economic standing. And he gets that, and he feels very satisfied. And then after, 6 months, a year or so, then he becomes bored with it. It's no longer an achievement. And he looks at all the other cars, he looks at the cars, the Cadillacs, or he looks at the Mercedes, he looks at the Lamborghinis, he's looking at the Porsches, and he feels like a small-timer, like he's a nobody, like he's nothing. Whereas at the beginning, when he first got his first car, he felt so rich, he felt so sublime, he felt so uplifted that he finally got his first car. So that car is no longer of any value. He's ready to junk it, even though it works quite well. But it's this whole mental concoction of status. This is a mental thing. You think because this person has a more expensive car or more prestigious car that he's better off. Because why is he better off? Well, people are looking at him. People are praising him. People look at it as it, especially sometimes on the freeway when they take off, when they put it into high gear and they zoom ahead of so many cars, it's like, and you can't help but look at that car going ahead. And your car, it can't do that. It just doesn't have that kind of power. So, therefore, you feel eclipsed. You feel inferior. You feel small. And if I can only have something like that, and I get on the freeway, and everybody looks at me. Or you hear those motorcyclists, they do that. They kind of rev it up to the max. And this guy, he's taking his life in his hands. Look at that, he's running up to 85, 95, 100 miles per hour. So the whole idea is prestige. Well, people will look at you. People will be attracted. People will admire you. People will say, wow, what a car. And you're identifying yourself, with that particular car. That's you. Well, that's me. This is my body. I worked like a dog, like an ass, to get that car. And I feel like a dog. I feel like an ass getting that car. Nonetheless, the car and I are non-different in the sense that I earned the money. I put in the time and the labor. And now that car is an extension of my body. So if people admire the car, they're admiring me. And if people hate the car, they're hating me. So this is an unfortunate psychological condition because it's a mental concoction. It's based on a concept. And if you didn't have the concept, you just wouldn't feel crushed or eclipsed or small if somebody was driving a Mercedes or a Porsche or any of those high-priced cars. It wouldn't matter. It's just another car to get you from one place to another. That's having a proper perspective of a situation. But as soon as false prestige enters into the situation and the desire to be a lord, to be important, to be highly regarded enters in, then we enter into a whole different psychology. And this is truly problematical because a person cannot have a moment of peace if he's always feeling inferior, if he's always feeling small time, if he's always feeling there's somebody better than me, if there's always feeling that I've got to come up to that level in order to feel that I'm important, that I have value, that my life has meaning. This is tragic. Anybody who has such a mentality is really a walking tragedy. It's true, because no one should have to feel, because he doesn't have some prestigious, whether it's an object, whether it's a home, whether it's it could be an airplane, could be a boat, it could be a job, it could be a company, a corporation, that a person feels identified with that, and if it's not doing well, he feels inferior. He feels crushed. He feels like a loser. And nobody today wants to be a loser. Everybody wants to be number one, the winner. So this causes people to literally not just go crazy. First, you have to be crazy. Now, how do you become crazy? Well, first you're in this eternal world, and you see everybody's glorifying Krishna and adoring him, applauding him, celebrating him, serving him. And since the living entity has independence and is enjoying this wonderful service that he's performing, but the curiosity comes into his mind as to, you know, what is it? I'm on the giving side right now, and what does it feel like to be on the receiving side? What does it feel like to always have so much opulence and property and glory and honor and distinction and people bowing down at you, people serving you? What does it feel like? What does it taste like? What's the experience like? So when that becomes a very strong, very powerful drive, then one is no longer qualified to live and act and work and serve in the spiritual world. And that is because we now want to become the competitor of Krishna. And Krishna has no competitor. No matter how much property we would even have in the spiritual world, it's never ours because it always belongs to Krishna. So as soon as we want to taste this feeling of lordship, taste this feeling of opulence, taste this feeling of glorification, taste this feeling of adoration and distinction. As long as we want that, we can't live in the eternal world anymore. We have to come to this world, because this is the world for persons who want to excuse me, feel like a lord. So yes, everyone gets a chance. I remember during in graduation from middle school, the principal, he read out a list of all of the graduates' future ambitions, what everybody wanted to be. So, in other words, this is how each of us wanted to be a lord. One wanted to be a doctor, another a lawyer, another a nurse, another a teacher, another this. I wanted to be a radio script writer. Nobody wanted to do that. So, anyway, the important point is that everybody wanted to establish themselves in some manner that they can earn money, they could have prestige, they could be honored. Nobody said he wanted to be a sanitation worker. Why not? It's a good job. It has benefits. Yes, but nobody wanted that because it was low prestige. If you became a sanitation worker, then after all, you play with all the filth and the dirt and the smells and all that kind of stuff. But for a devotee, it could be something wonderful because it's kind of like an austerity. It's an austerity. You know, I'm not so great. I'm not so wonderful. I'm not so glorious. I'm just meant for this. You know, so the point is, I'm not saying that everybody here should, after this class, go downtown and try to get a job as a sanitation worker. That's not the indication of this class. If you want to do that, that's another matter. But please check with Svavas before you do anything like that, because he may have some sanitation work right here in the community to be done. So anyway, there's no dearth of service as far as sanitation goes all around the community. The point I'm trying to bring out is that, is that as long as we are identifying ourselves with the body, and when the body is glorified or it's honored or it receives prestige or it receives glorification, then we're happy. And when it doesn't receive that or it receives the very opposite of that, then we're miserable. So happiness and misery are being determined by a mental concoction, the idea that this is good and this is bad. And it's a construct. Somebody's constructed this idea, and millions of people have imbibed it and come to believe it. And their happiness and distress is simply based upon whether they're coming up to this artificial standard or whether they're not coming up to the artificial standard. So in Krishna consciousness, Srila Prabhupada has helped us to understand that this is all meaningless. And that is because no matter how much you achieve, no matter what prestige you have, even if you're a president and your picture is in the newspapers or on television every day, and people are talking about you every day, you're probably the most prestigious person in the country. Nonetheless, when you leave this world, then somebody comes and replaces you. And as the time goes on, people more and more forget you. How many people are now talking about Harry Truman, the president? I never hear anybody here talk about him. Maybe people from my generation do, because he was involved with the Second World War. But nobody talks about him. Everybody has forgotten, unless you're a political, you're into a political aficionado, you're into that kind of a thing. But people are forgotten. You become a sports athlete, and everybody applauds you, everybody glorifies you, everyone honors you. And then you get too old. You're 35, 40, and you have to leave, and you're replaced. 5 years later, how many people are talking about Michael Jordan, the basketball player? Hardly any. Now it's, you know, Kobe Bryant. And in 5 years, who will be talking about Kobe Bryant? So this is the situation. When people are not talking about you and you're used to it, it's a very depressing situation. Because that has become your identity. When that is our identity, I'm important, I'm valuable, I'm glorious, I'm high, I'm big, everyone's talking. When that's our identity and then it stops, as high as you go, that's as low as you go. And you come down to a low position and you're empty. And what do? How do you relieve yourself of this depression? What can you do? Well, you take alcohol and you become cheerful. You get giddy. Or you take some other drug which is in vogue. Or you take that, they call it ecstasy. It's not ecstasy. It's just what they call an ersatz. Ersatz means a phony baloney ecstasy. It's not the real thing. It's like a shadow. It's like if I put my hand over there and you touch the shadow, you're not touching my hand, you're not going to get any warmth from it. You get the impression that you haven't touched my hand. So it's phony, it's false, and not only that, but because it's habit-forming, it causes a person to lose his sense of ethics, his sense of morality. Because the mind becomes so dogged, it becomes so pummeled, like a slave. It becomes whipped. Get it, get it, get it, get it, get it. And you can't help yourself. And if you don't have any money, then what do? You might mug somebody. You might become a pickpocket and learn the art going into the buses, you know, see somebody how to take their wallets quickly, or go into the department stores so that you can get your fix. So you lose your morality. Therefore, no one can compare these drugs to transcendental bliss. Because in transcendental bliss, when you get that, your morality actually goes high up. You're very sensitive. You don't want to harm anybody. You don't want to hurt anybody. You don't want to disturb. You don't want to shake or rattle anybody. You're very conscious of their needs, of their concerns, of what they have, what they don't have. You're eager to be helpful, not harmful. That's the nature of transcendental, true transcendental meditation or Krishna consciousness. This is Krishna. He's sensitive to everyone, everywhere. He's in the heart of all. And even when he was on the planet, he was extremely sensitive to the needs, especially of his devotees. He says, whenever and wherever there's a decline in religious practice and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend to this world to deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principles of religion. I myself appear millennium after millennium. So he comes, yes, to reestablish the principles of religion, but he also comes to interact, to have loving exchanges with his devotees, because he loves his devotees. He loves them and wants to shower them. He wants to drown them and drench them with his love. And when the devotee is drenched with this love, there is nothing else to be desired. Because that is the highest, that is the best, it's the greatest. And what is the result of being drenched with Krishna's love? You just want to serve Krishna. You feel so beholden to him, so obliged to him. And it's never a burden. Because the burdens are the pleasures. When it becomes difficult, when it's a trial, when it's tribulation, Krishna is challenging your love. He's in effect saying, if you really love me, then you'll strive, you'll try, you'll do the very best you can, even if you fail, but you will go down fighting. You will never give up because you love me and I'm worth fighting for. That's why when we get difficulties, or trials, tribulations, problems, there is our challenge for, do we love Krishna? If you love him, then you're ready to give up whatever time is necessary. Give up your energy. We give up our energy. We stop doing certain things in order to satisfy, to please the Supreme Lord, to do our various duties. And we'd rather go down fighting rather than turn back or turn coat and run from the battle. Because we know that if you run from the battle, you nearly never run from it. You will face another battle sometime in the future. The battle is to purify us. The battle is to strengthen us. The battle is to transform us. How? Every battle contains the seed of some potential virtue that we can develop. Sometimes it's we're fearful, we're shaking. For example, just to get up and speak, I remember the first time that I ever spoke. I was shaking, and my voice was quivering. I was almost stuttering. But you had to go through it. And you go through it, and it's little by little, somehow Krishna makes it work, and you learn it. So you do it more and more and more. Same with leading a kirtan, the first time anyone has led a kirtan. I mean, I was so shaky that I was going to hit the wrong note. I was going to forget the words. But you take the challenge, and you go through it again and again and again, and little by little, you get good at it. Krishna strengthens you. He enables us. He gives us the ability, the talent, so that we can accomplish it. So, therefore, the important point, again, is that we should not be striving to be lords. We should not be striving to accomplish big things in the world. If you want to do that, you'll be disappointed. That's what this verse is saying. By bereavement. Many people in the motion picture industry, when they're no longer known, so they go to this rest home, or kind of like a place where you can go and live out your last years in retirement. Kind of like a movie for retirement place. So persons are there, and what do? You watch your old movies. And you remember the crowds roaring. You remember the big applause. You remember that Academy Award that you had. What is this? This is living in a false memory. The memory is itself based upon something that's unreal, untrue, temporary. You get this piece of whatever it is. I don't know what it's made out of, but it's a statue. And you have it, and then you leave it. And then your kids get it. And then they leave it. And eventually, after 10,000 years, 100,000 years, who knows what scrap pile it's in. So none of these things have any real value. But what does have value? What does have value is loving surrender to Krishna. Krishna says, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. He rewards us, and what does he reward us with? He rewards us with himself. When a devotee performs some devotional service, for example, it says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that when someone, Krishna says, when somebody offers me a tulsi leaf with some Ganga water, he says, I'm so obliged to this person that I can never repay him or her. It's impossible for me. I feel so much in debt. So the only thing I can give, and even that's too little, he says, is myself. Can you imagine? Krishna, who's running the whole universe, endless universes, millions of universes, whose intelligence is beyond our wildest conception, who's so powerful, who's everywhere present, who has all opulence, beauty, wealth, and strength, and fame, and knowledge, and renunciation. He has all of this, and yet he feels that what he's giving us devotees for doing a little service, offering that tulsi leaf to him, he feels he's not good enough for you. Think about that. Talk about humility. It doesn't get deeper than that. It doesn't get more profound. And it's really a wonderful example for us to strive for. If Krishna feels that towards us, what should we feel when a devotee offers me a cookie, or he offers me gives me a book, or he gives me some nice words? So we should always feel some great appreciation that, wow, this devotee is recognizing what I did. He feels something good for me. So, I see this false humility sometimes devotees show. You tell them, hey, I really loved your class. I really loved the book that you gave me. No. What do you mean, no? Prabhupada never did that. You gave him a watch, he accepted it. Thank you very much. All glory. You gave him a ring, you gave him a flower, you gave him a cookie, whatever. Thank you very much. He would lower his head and smile. He never said, no, I'm too small for that. I'm too low. He didn't do that. Because he saw that as Krishna's love coming to him. And even if it came from a little child, he considered that Krishna's love. And when Krishna gives his love to you, you don't rebuff it. You don't reject it. You don't repel it. You accept it graciously with the full feeling inwardly. You're not worthy of it, but externally we can at least recognize and make the person who is giving it feel that his love is respected and honored by accepting the gift. This is very important. So we should not get involved in false humility like that. So therefore, we all have this, as this verse mentions, we all have this opportunity to get rid of this false identification that I mentioned about. This idea that I'm the body. This idea, once I'm the body and I have to lord it over this material world with this body, I have to control this. I have to control. I have to achieve certain kinds of knowledge so that people will admire me. I have to know 10 million verses so that I can sprout them out in my class and everybody can say, wow, you're really erudite. How learned. You know, why do I have to do that? That's not necessary. Even if you don't know one verse, but you know the essence of these verses, that's important. If you know the verses, that's fine, but it's not show business time. It's not show time. It shouldn't be that all. So the important point is that, yes, you like verses, you like Sanskrit, memorize them. And yes, present them in your classes, but don't use them as a flag saying, hey, check out my learnedness. That should not be the idea, ever. But unfortunately, it sometimes is, because this body, which we're still identifying with, and we still want to be glorified, we still want it to be honored, we still want it to be praised, we still want it to be applauded, that's wrong, and it's bad, and it's evil, and what we should be thinking of is this body is just worthless, useless, good for nothing, except one thing, serving Krishna with all the love we can muster in our heart, and we should go down sacrificing this body, considering that that sacrifice in loving service is absolutely zero. We owe Krishna billions and trillions and zillions of times more than we can ever offer to him. Why? Look at what he's given to us. I won't enumerate all that, but I could go on day after. Look at Sheshanag. He's going on for thousands of years, and he can't come to an end of Krishna's glories. So what to speak of myself? I'm a fallen soul, and if I start talking of all the mercies that I've got, notwithstanding my fallen position, I would just go on endlessly until the end of the kalpa. So the important point is that we are, yes, we have a debt to Krishna, we are obliged to Krishna, we should feel great love for Krishna. Why? Because he's being so kind and merciful and affectionate to us. And even when we ignore him, we deny him, we decry him, or we forget him, because thinking that, well, you know, what do I have to think of him for? He's running my body, that's enough, I just do my service. No, we have to be... What does Krishna say? Engage your mind always in thinking of me. Always, not partially, not occasionally, not sometimes, always. This is our challenge. It's very difficult. I mean, I'm trying... What do I do to try to accomplish that? I rarely accomplish it, but what I try to do in anything that I'm doing, I keep saying, for example, you know, I'm taking the book, I'm going to start reading, and first thing I say, this is for you, Krishna. Or I'm putting some salt in, this is for you, Krishna. I'm washing something, this is for you, Krishna. If I can get into the habit of saying continuously, this is for you, Lord, this is for you, Lord, this is for you, Lord, this is for you, Lord. I get into the habit, even if I say it mechanically, it reminds me that there is a Lord and there is a person who is enabling me to do everything that I'm doing, and I am beholden to him, I am in debt to him, and I should be cultivating, striving, begging, crying out, Lord, please flood my heart with love so that I can give you more love, and I can serve the devotees with more love and better quality of service and even more service, so that you will be pleased, and if you're pleased, the whole world will be pleased. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments that anybody would like to make now? Yes, sir. Prem Sankirtan. Huh? Huh? You want to get the mic? Yeah, he's getting it for you. Yes, we have one of our A1 book distributors about to ask me a question. Go ahead.
Sexual desire.
Sexual desire.
The most desirable in this material world. Most desirable. Everybody wants it. This is why we are here in material world. So can you explain in few words how, when you're doing these things, how you are affected by adhyatmika, adibhautika, adidaivika?
Can you explain what is the question, please?
How you are affected by adiatmika, adibhautika, adidaivika. How we are affected when we are doing, performing sexual activity. Okay.
How we are affected.
Affected. I mean,
so
how.
Say the same. Adiatmika,
adibhautika.
Affected or affecting.
Affected.
Okay. How we are affected.
Yeah.
By adiatmika?
Adibhautika, adidaivika.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Okay. Adiatmika, our own body and mind are disturbing us.
Yes, when perform sexual activity, because this is most desirable in the material world.
Okay. I don't know what your question is. You're saying...
Okay, my question is, when we perform sexual activity, sex, okay?
Not when I perform.
No, we, but generally, people in general. So how
go ahead.
How they're affected by adiatmika, adibhautika, and adidaivika.
Beautiful pronunciation. We can use you in our next class on pronunciation. thank you. So how
How people in general are affected by this three misery, what is explained is
with respect
just
to
in that fact, how
with respect to sexuality, because you mentioned that.
Sure, okay. Because it's...
Well, as far as sexuality goes, sexuality, I'm going to make it real quick and real fast, it's basically the perverted reflection of real sexuality or true sexuality, spiritual sexuality, which takes place in the heart, okay? Material sexuality takes place in the genitals. That's where that takes place, and one gets a little brief pleasure there, okay? And therefore, it's a driving pleasure, it's a compelling pleasure. That these are the pleasures which come from one's own body and mind, okay? And, of course, there's usually a partner, so when there's a partner there, that partner is giving pleasure as well, so you have the adibhautika in that respect. The pleasure itself, which is coming, you may just even remember some experience, and that's like adiatmika. And when you have a partner, then that's adibhautika, because the partner is assisting in the cultivation of that or the acquirement of that pleasure. And as far as adidaivika, I don't see any particular relationship. Maybe there is that I can't think of at the moment. But the important point is this, is that devotees have to be thinking in terms of... Prabhupada makes this point over and over again. The gopis of Vrindavan, when they were having Ras Lila, they were in such incredible degree of ecstasy, and it was all. And he mentions there was no physical sexuality involved in that. And there was no physical sexuality involved in this. It was all taking place in the heart. Why in the heart? Because they were always thinking of how they could please Krishna. That's a love feeling. And as that feeling gets cultivated, it's a conscious feeling. When Krishna is walking on the grass or on the pebbles, they're crying that Krishna's feet are being pierced by the little pebbles. They're identifying. They're so much in love with wanting to please him in some way. Some are singing for him. Some are cooking for him. Some are playing an instrument for him. Every one of them is thinking continuously of their beloved Krishna. So that cultivates within the heart transcendental bliss. It doesn't come from the genital area. It comes from the heart area, which is the heart chakra, which is there. And what happens is that as Krishna feels the joy that the love that you're expressing to him, he reciprocates in the heart, and the heart is flooded, so to speak, and it's flooded with Krishna's love, and that love that you get from Krishna is translated into ecstatic symptoms. Those symptoms may shivering, stunned, A person may be perspiring. A person may be trembling, crying. All of these things are present in transcendental bliss. So, therefore, in that is the goal. The goal is not to be, it's not even Krishna prema. Not for us. Our goal is to give Krishna, to increase his pleasure. And through the process of doing that unreservedly, completely, selflessly, without any thought of return for oneself, only to increase the pleasure of Krishna, if we do it in that spirit, in that idea, then that is the way, the means to Krishna prema. As soon as selfishness enters into the picture, then there is a problem. Now.
My question was more into terms, how, what kind of miseries is afflicted when you perform this activity in terms of Adi Atmika, Adi Bhautika, and Adi Taivika.
Okay, so the question now comes to what kind of miseries there are. Okay, anytime, it's right in the Bhagavad Gita, it's very clearly, when we contemplate the objects of this, of the senses, then what happens, we become attached to them, and then we become lustful for them, then we become anxious about or angry when we can't get them, then become delusional in terms of imagining what these things give us. And that we become bewildered, so bewildered that that our memory becomes disturbed. We don't remember the pains that we got. So, I'm zeroing in on your question now. The point is that you become miserable anytime you become attached to something physical or material. You see, if you can't get it, then you're frustrated. When you're frustrated, you become angry. When you become angry, you immediately get into conflict with persons. The anger may be expressed, and it may be, you may be feeling it. You know, people, you've gone over to people and they say, "Excuse me, sir, what do you want? Leave me alone." You know, or another person who's actually very together, "Excuse me, sir, yes, can I help you?" You know, different ways of expressing. So what that happens is when you get into conflict with people, unnecessarily, as a result of this, as a result of this attachment to sexual pleasure, or it could be pleasure to taking honey or ice cream, whatever it is, any material pleasure, you get attached to it. What will happen is you will become miserable as a result. And when you can't get it, you're miserable. Or when you have it, you're frightened that it will be taken away from you. You're miserable. And when somebody does take it away from you, somebody steals your car, or somebody steals a painting in your home, or somebody, anything that gave you false prestige, somebody takes it away, you're miserable. So I'm giving different ideas of how adiatmika, in your body and mind, you're feeling miserable. Somebody does something to you, miserable. And if you say something which is which causes a person to be upset or disturbed, and he comes back at you, may punch you in the face, you feel miserable. So these are the ways. That's why attachment to anything material is not useful, not beneficial, not helpful. Rather, we should become attached to Krishna, and that is always beneficial, always helpful. Okay? I hope I answered your question this time. No, that's it. Everybody has to go. That's it. You can talk to me privately. Thank you very much. Glories to Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.